Welcome to Classically Current, the podcast where we review current films and old films and link them together. With your host, Zach
and Kyle.
If you guys haven't been with us before, this is a podcast where we are dedicated to linking current films of today with the classic films of the past. Last week we did John Wick, and this week we are doing the current film Palm Springs, which came out this year on Hulu. It's a Hulu original movie, and me and Kyle are excited to talk about it today. What if you relived the same day every day? Which day would you choose? Would it be your first kiss, a sporting event, holding your child for the first time? Maybe it was your wedding day. The infinite time loop plot device has been used in several films, from comedies like Groundhog Day to the sci-fi in Edge of Tomorrow to a romantic dramedy, About Time, and the horrors of Happy Death Day. A lot of laughs, thrills, scares, and even tears have been a part of this time loop experiment. How does Palm Springs fare? Will it stand with other classics of the subgenre? While stuck at a wedding in Palm Springs, Niles meets Sarah, the maid of honor and family black sheep. After he rescues her from a disastrous toast, Sarah becomes drawn to Niles and his offbeat nihilism. But when their impromptu tryst is thwarted by a surreal interruption, Sarah must join Niles in embracing the idea that nothing really matters, and they begin wreaking spirited havoc on the wedding celebration.
It's gonna be a beautiful wedding.
Here you are, standing on the precipice of something so much bigger than anyone here. But always remember, you are not alone.
I don't think that we met. I'm Sarah.
Niles.
Hi.
Hi.
Good day so far?
Today, tomorrow, it's all the same.
You! What is going on? Hey, get out of the water!
Guess you followed me. It's one of those infinite time loop situations you might have heard about.
That I might have heard about?
Yeah.
The second you fall asleep, it all just goes back to the start.
I drove all the way back home to Austin, and I still woke up here.
One time I smoked a bunch of crystal and made it all the way to Equatorial Guinea. It was a huge waste of time.
Well, then what's the point of living?
We kind of have no choice but to live.
No, I'm gonna get out of this.
Suit yourself.
See you tomorrow.
So now what do we do?
You just have to embrace the fact that nothing matters.
Do you sleep with people in here?
Great question. I have, but it takes a lot of work.
I can't keep waking up in here. Everything that we are doing is meaningless.
I hope it's not all meaningless.
At least you have each other. Nothing worse than going through this shit alone.
There's a bomb in the cake. Don't worry. I used to be a bomb guy. Stand back!
Oh, my God! Let me make
it plain. Gotta make way for it's gonna be a beautiful wedding.
The film is directed by Max Barbacow, who is also a writer. This is his first full feature-length film, and it originally premiered at the 2020 Sundance Film Festival and would later be picked up by Neon and Hulu. The other feature that he has done is Mommy, I'm a Bastard, which is an autobiographical feature about his adoption. Just a little background on Max. He earned his Master of Fine Arts in Directing from the AFI Conservatory, and he has trained with other filmmakers such as Werner Herzog at Escuela Internacional de Cine TV in Cuba. So This guy's also brilliant. He's a graduate of Yale University, and his next feature is going to be Good, Bad, and Undead, which will be starring none other than Peter Dinklage and Jason Momoa for Legendary Pictures. That's going to be an interesting duo right there.
Well, you don't really see Peter Dinklage on the big screen very often.
No, you don't. Other than Game of Thrones.
Other than Elf.
And Elf. He did have a role in Elf.
He was an Elf, which has become iconic, his character now, pretty much. It's really funny. This guy, I mean, it's impressive for a narrative feature debut. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's nice that these streaming companies are coming up with some new talent. They're bringing a lot of people in to make really good content for their streaming platforms. And so, you know.
Yeah, I think Netflix, you've kind of seen how their own filmography has grown. And now you've got Hulu that's kind of stepping up their game. So it's really interesting. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how theaters play out, you know, when you have all these other filmmakers that are working with these production companies that are, you know, online streaming services, and they can do it through that platform instead of doing it through these motion picture films. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the future with cinema.
I mean, the industry is transforming in front of us. I mean, it's crazy all the different streaming services that we have to pay attention to now.
Yeah.
I mean, it used to just be Hulu, Netflix, and maybe CBS or something. Maybe CBS All Access or Sling or something. Yep. Now you have all the big giants have their own thing. You have HBO Max, you have Netflix, you have Hulu, and then you have YouTube TV, you have YouTube Originals, and CBS All Access is now considering doing Paramount TV, which is going to have a huge array of things. I mean, there's other ones out there. But there's just so many now. Quibi is a new one. I've been hearing about Quibi more.
And in fact, there's an interesting show I was wanting to watch on there with Dane DeHaan. I can't remember the Stranger, I think. I've been wanting to check that out. But yeah, I've been seeing more. Quibi is coming out with more content. So, I mean, all these different streaming platforms that you have at your disposal.
Go ahead.
I think it's heightened by, you know, this COVID, the whole COVID thing, and how people are kind of stuck more at home, that now it's like, I feel like it's going to make, you know, the theater obsolete after a while,
which is unfortunate,
but, you know, I think it's just part of the, part of the future of television.
Yeah, and I'd hate to see the theater experience, you know, leave our zeitgeist, like the social zeitgeist, because, I mean, there's such a communal experience about going to a theater, and we haven't been able to go to a theater in a long time, and Tenet is coming out soon, and so hopefully we can see that, but, you know, Tenet is supposed to be the one that's going to hopefully bring people back into the theaters. That's a huge business that's going to be hurting this whole season.
Think of how many awkward dates and, you know, how many friendships how many movies did we go to together, Zach, like back in high school and college?
It's
definitely a loss, I think, to not have that sort of experience anymore, but maybe it'll be made up for in other ways.
Well, it's really just going to be event movies that are going to be going to theaters, and then you're going to have these more independent dramas or independent movies at home that you're going to be experiencing. I mean, Netflix has a lot of them. They're coming out with all sorts of different... Netflix is all about content. I mean, they just have so much stuff, and it's something for everybody. And then all these different... streaming services are going to have their own niche, I feel like. HBO Max is just recently did their DC Expo, where they were going over all the different TV shows and movies and all this entertainment that they're coming out with. So that's going to be a part of the HBO brand. And then you have Star Trek with the CBS Paramount brand. And then HBO also has, you know, Game of Thrones, and they're going to do some other prequels and stuff with that one. I mean, Netflix has Stranger Things, and they're trying to develop more franchise type stuff. And then Amazon bought Lord of the Rings rights, and they're going to make a Lord of the Rings show. So you're going to have a lot of different stuff that a lot of people are going to watch, that a lot of people are going to want to watch. And so you may see live TV go by the wayside and just have streaming and maybe just sports.
Yep.
And that'll be it.
Yep.
Sports will be live. But other than that, you know, we're getting off on a tangent, of course.
Yeah, yes.
But it's interesting to talk about, because we haven't really gotten to talk about this kind of stuff.
Well, it's just interesting to know, like, what's, you know, going on in the current world of film, too. So I think that's always good to keep note on that, especially for a film podcast. Speaking of film, let's get back into Palm Springs, Zach. What's some of the background of that film?
Yeah, so the writer, Andy Sierra, one of the writers, Andy Sierra, wrote the first draft of the script during his second year as a film student at AFI and did not include elements of science fiction at that time. But he said the script originally had more in common with Leaving Las Vegas than Groundhog Day, and the script was deliberately limited so that it would be something they might actually be able to make. Sierra went on to write for the television show Lodge 49 and redeveloped the script into a more ambitious project. While Groundhog Day was a fundamentally important starting point for the use of a time loop in a romantic comedy, Barbacow and Sierra knew they needed to distance their script from the film. This led to starting with Niles already within the time loop, making the film like a sequel to a movie that doesn't exist. So the project was announced in November 2018 after it secured a tax credit to film in California. However, due to the limitations of that tax credit, they were forced to film in Los Angeles area rather than Palm Springs. So Andy Samberg was revealed as starring in the film in March of 2019. Kristen Milioti and J.K. Simmons joined the cast, and Camila Mendez was added in April of that year. Filming began in April 2019, and shots feature the Cabazon dinosaurs.
Yeah, so those are like some dinosaurs that are like you can see from Interstate 10 when you're on your way to Palm Springs. I think that was just like a partly inspired motif, I guess, in the movie. It's kind of a nod to Palm Springs itself, maybe.
Well, interesting that they, you know, it's called Palm Springs, but it's really not in Palm Springs. It's in Los Angeles area, which is funny. And, reading about how the story came about, because it is an interesting construction of a story. It's a lot like the films we mentioned earlier in the way it does like a time loop, but they added different elements to it that were refreshing, I thought. It didn't seem like, I mean, it seemed like a good use of the time loop plot device in this movie.
Yeah, and I thought it made up its hour and a half pretty well. I thought it was well edited.
It has a pretty brisk pace to it.
Sure did.
And which I really liked. It didn't feel like it was bogged down or overly long, or it didn't feel like it overstayed its welcome or anything.
So, as we said before, Palm Springs, it had its original premiere at Sundance Film Festival, where it was later picked up by Hulu and Neon, who ended up paying, I believe, $17.5 million for the film, which actually broke the previous record for the highest sale from a film from Sundance by a whopping 69 cents. So, yeah, by just a little bit. Later reports actually put the deal closer to $22 million when all the guarantees were factored in. It was released on Hulu and in select drive-in theaters on July 10, 2020. And Hulu also claimed that this film did set the record by netting more hours watched over its first 3 days than any other film in its platform's history. It was reported that 8.1% of the subscribers had watched the film over its first month. So pretty impressive on the sales part. And as far as the box office goes, it grossed $164,000 from 66 theaters in its opening weekend. And it played in about 30 theaters in its second weekend, making $101,000. So I guess kind of average, but it's a very select amount of theaters that it's playing in. So
I think did it say what its budget was?
It was $5 million, Zach.
Yeah, that's interesting that the movie itself was bought and they made the movie for about $5 million and it premiered at Sundance, and it sounds like it broke the record for the highest sale, which was $17.5 million and 69 cents. So good on them for breaking the record. I mean, that's impressive. They made the movie for $5 million, which, you know, it's more of a low-budget comedy, but I didn't feel like they needed all that much star power or money for this simple, intimate, romantic
comedy. Yeah. I think it's impressive. Comedy. I think it's impressive they were able to get Andy Samberg. Krista Milioti, I haven't seen as much of, but I thought she played right. Well. J.K. Simmons, a fine actor. Peter Gallagher, you know. So they got
the mother from How I Met Your Mother.
Can oh, that's you believe right. It? Yes.
That, I mean, I stopped watching that show after some of the later seasons, but I did watch the finale, and I really like this actress. I watched her in. She was also in Fargo for one of the seasons in the Fargo TV series, and she was really good in that as well. But really good. A performance from Christine Milioti overall, and it's impressive the critical response to this movie as well. It's 94% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is very good, out of 170 critics, with an average rating of 8.6 out of 10. And Metacritic, it had 84 out of 100, which is universal acclaim. That's also very good. And IMDb is 7.5 out of 10. But for me, expectations for this movie, so the response, the overall expectations for this movie. I didn't really see any trailers for it. I just kind of heard about it through different media outlets that were talking about it, like I do with a lot of movies. I don't like to watch a lot of trailers, but I like Andy Samberg. I think he's hilarious in the Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and I like Christine Milioti, and I was excited to watch this movie and finally get to see what it was all about, because I knew it had some type of time loop element before going in, which I think is kind of important to know before you go into it. But if you hadn't known that going into it, you would be very confused, I feel like. At least the first 10, 15 minutes, you'd be very confused.
I did not know that, Zach, when I first watched it.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about it.
Well, I knew nothing about it. To be honest, I didn't have high expectations for it. I didn't think it was going to be like a really well-made film. I was just, you know, hoping it would have some like funny moments to it, but I definitely think it surpassed my expectations. Definitely had more of a concept to it than I would have given it credit for the original expectation. But yeah, I didn't know anything about, I've never seen Groundhog Day, which I guess is something everyone compares it to. So I really knew nothing about it. Knew nothing about the loop that it was going to have and all that.
That leads us to the review portion of the show, where we're going to give our thoughts and opinions on the movie as a whole. Yeah, there's a lot of things I want to talk about in this movie, and it's interesting that you didn't know the plot device, the time loop plot device going in. I mean, I think for me, I mean, I knew it was a comedy. I knew it had this time loop plot device. So at the beginning of the movie, there's a lot of strange behavior that's going on, and I was just laughing at it because I just kind of knew that it was, part of the time loop, but I didn't know where they were going to go with it yet. And that makes for some pretty funny moments at the beginning and throughout the movie. I felt like they were able to sustain that for the most part. Overall, it was very enjoyable romantic comedy, and it's very well written. I mean, it's very tightly paced. It's an hour and 30 minutes, but it's, you know, there's a lot of almost like a montage at certain points when they're kind of getting into the time loop and explaining how kind of the world works and what happens. It's always fun to see those moments, because I've seen it in Edge of Tomorrow. I've seen it in Groundhog Day. I've seen it even a little bit in About Time, the romantic comedy with Rachel McAdams and Domhnall Gleeson. In that movie, they had a time travel element more so. But in this one, they were able to keep the jokes pretty... I mean, there was always something to look forward to, I felt like. It didn't feel like the plot device overstayed its welcome. No. So in that aspect of the movie, it was really impressive. And that all goes down to the writing and the plotting out of what happens and at what point in the movie. And I really like the chemistry with Sarah and Niles, which is Andy Samberg and Kristen Milioti. I like the chemistry between the two characters.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there was definitely some good chemistry between the lead characters here. I think this is Andy Samberg's most serious role that I've seen him really play, and I thought he pulled it off pretty well. And you know, I think it was well balanced with the amount of laughs. As far as the genre itself, I'm not the biggest fan of rom-coms, but this movie definitely showed Max Barbacow's ability to do kind of multiple genres, I felt. You know, you got a little bit of sci-fi in there as well. You get some dark comedy, some adventure, even a little bit of suspense, or just kind of like these dark, eerie vibes to it a little bit here and there. So it's a strong debut from Max Barbacow.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's a good point, because it did have a lot of different feelings throughout. It wasn't just like a romantic comedy. There were a lot of different elements that made it kind of unique and stand out in that regard. So good job on him and his team. And I'm looking forward to seeing some of his other work that he's going to be doing in the future.
Yeah, I thought too, like the way it's shot was excellent. I actually really felt like we were in Palm Springs. I know it was shot in L.A., which is a little further out south, I think, of Palm Springs. But, you know, it really... I've been to Palm Springs, and that's, like, kind of what it is. It's, like, this kind of upscale town that's literally in the middle of the desert. And there's just not a whole lot outside of it. But I thought they got the vibe of the city itself down very well.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I didn't have anything to compare it to. I was like, California, I mean, I know there's desert, and I know it's not in LA because it's not really a big city, but so I guess I didn't know much about the Palm Springs, the town, or the city very much at all, but I felt like they did a good job of creating the world and everything that took place in it, so...
What did you think of the some of the concepts? I mean, the it is told in like a cyclical sort of storyline plot. I don't know if we've really seen that in as much in comedies. I have seen it like in a sci-fi, like Looper is one movie that would come to mind. Groundhog Day, I guess you could compare it to. But would you say it's kind of like Groundhog Day, almost told inside out?
Yeah, and in some ways, yes. And I do want to touch on that. We'll get into more spoilers here. I guess with, you know, as we have just kind of talked about our overall viewpoints of the movie, we're going to get into some of the spoilers, because there's a lot of things that happen in the movie that I don't want to spoil for anybody. And I don't want to spoil anything too much regarding the plot and Andy Samberg's character and the other characters in the world. So if you have not seen Palm Springs, feel free to watch it and then come back and listen to the rest of the podcast. But to answer your question, Kyle, this movie is like Groundhog Day, but it adds another layer to that time loop, because you're adding not just one character, but you're adding two characters into this time loop, which I thought was a brilliant idea. I mean, in Groundhog Day, I don't know. I mean, I guess you haven't seen it, but Bill Murray's character is the only one that experiences that time loop. And I always kind of wondered if that could potentially happen to someone else in that scenario. And this movie, you kind of get to see that come to fruition. You get Sarah, who gets in the time loop mistakenly, and then you have J.K. Simmons, the great J.K. Simmons, also makes an appearance as one of the people that is involved in the time loop, and his character is pretty funny in the movie as well, and he's just great altogether. I mean, he's good in everything. But he's good in Allstate commercials, he's good in voice acting for cartoons, he's also good in this movie.
Even as a regular actor.
Even as a regular actor in, what's that Damien Chazelle movie? Oh, Whiplash.
Yep, he won Academy Award for that, I believe.
Yeah, he's just over, I mean, I just love watching him on screen wherever he is. But I liked that element of this, it added more to that Groundhog plot time loop, and it added two characters. But not only that, you're seeing the movie at the beginning, seeing it at the end of Groundhog Day. So the ending of Groundhog Day would be the beginning of this movie. So it's like a spiritual sequel in that way, which is interesting.
Yeah. I found this movie to be like very heavy on the philosophical questions that it kind of brings about. I think maybe this was one of your issues of the movie. Did you feel like they were all answered?
Well, yeah, it asks a lot of philosophical questions at the beginning. What's life about? Or really, they don't even ask that. They're like, this life is meaningless. It's pointless. And that's Andy Samberg's character. And you can understand that because he's lived the same day over and over and over, and Sarah is playing catch up. And he is depressed. He's just buzzed all the time. He doesn't know how to get out of this.
There's like an end scene. I'm not going to give too much away, but he's kind of become comfortable with it. And I think that's just kind of the cycle of life for a lot of people too, is we just get comfortable and we stay stagnant. And there's a chance where he can, change that course.
Oh, that's a good point, because at the end he's clinging to this world that he really loves to be a part of, because he doesn't have to go back to the real world and deal with the disappointments and all this. I mean, in this world he can live infinitely and do whatever he wants, and he doesn't have to get in trouble for anything.
It's very interesting how he wants to be a part of that world and just wants to stay in that, that time and that place. But he also has a very nihilistic view of the world. Like, it's kind of like a depressing view of the world. Hence the name Niles. So,
yes. Yeah, it's a perfect name for him. But
don't you think it just kind of shows how he would rather be miserable? Like, some people almost prefer the being comfortable to being, challenged. They'd rather be comfortable and miserable than they would to have to go into the unknown or the black hole, the abyss of the unknown.
Well, I think that's a very good point, because that's what Sarah helps bring him out of that funk, mm-hmm. which seems impossible. I mean, who knows how many years, I don't know, days, months, years that he was in there before Sarah made an appearance. Mm-hmm. And now he has to figure out what he really wants, what he truly wants. And Sarah helps him see a different point of view and convince him. And that's why at the end of the movie, he's just so convinced that he needs this place and that they need to stay, doing what they've been doing to be happy. When she's like, well, there's no growth here. And she can't stand the person that she was in the real world. And she has to fix the problems that she caused in the real world, or she's never going to be able to live with herself.
I was going to say, it's interesting how you note that there's no growth in that world, because it is, a barren desert, which I think is just the perfect, kind of backdrop for that type of concept of the film. So yeah, it's just, there's not a whole lot of growth there that you can't really, you have to kind of go to the other side to see what there is. Maybe the grass is greener, maybe it's not, who knows. But it's more about just going through it with somebody, having someone to go through it with, that makes it worth it.
Right, and you know, they spend so much time at the beginning of the movie talking about how awful, well, he, mostly Andy Samberg, Niles, which, you know, we've kind of talked about it. It's in his name. He doesn't see the point to life. He's just been living the same days over and over and over. And there's a touching moment also, not just with Sarah at the end, but a touching moment, I feel like, with J.K. Simmons' character. When J.K. Simmons' character finally stops hunting him, he's able to kind of come to peace with his existence, with him and his wife and his kids. And then Andy Samberg, Niles, gets to get a glimpse of what his life could be like in the future if he does leave this time loop. I mean, if he's never going to be able to have kids in the time loop. He's never going to be able to see growth.
Right.
Or, you know, and there's a lot of comedy throughout this movie that is very enjoyable, but there's a lot of, the movie takes place so quickly, it's hard to just stop and think about the philosophical elements of it, and it's there something I've lot, been thinking yeah. about the past, you know, day since I haven't, you know, I watched it last night, and I've just been thinking about it during the day about all the different things that were going on and what it means, and I think we're kind of uncovering it as we're talking about it a little bit, but
yeah, I think so too. I think, you know, like you said, hour and a half to kind of unpeel back some of the layers. You know, it's not easy. I think it's something you kind of have to watch on repeat. And I think it's a film that's worth watching on repeat. You know, and I had been thinking too all day, like, what is the significance of those dinosaurs? But
right.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if that's something you want to get into. Well, I was thinking
about that too. I mean, I've been reading some theories about, you know, when they did see the dinosaurs, it was when they were high, or when Andy Samberg was high on mushrooms.
But so they also see them first time. Yeah, but then they also see them later when they're not high.
Later on.
So maybe that's interesting. Real. Yeah.
So maybe
they've been there since the dawn of time. Maybe that's like that. They've been in the loop since the beginning. Or maybe, like, you know how there's the earthquakes, kind of opens up this whole other, like, time warp or time loop. I don't know. I think there's a lot.
And maybe, yeah, I feel like you could make a lot of interesting theories about this movie. And that's what makes it a really good movie, really enjoyable and also rewatchable in a lot of ways. I mean, as I finished the movie, I was like, man, there's so many things that I want to kind of rediscover and uncover again when I watch it again, because there's so much strange behavior that goes on between Niles and at the beginning mostly, but also throughout the film, you get to see these moments where you're just like, well, what is going on? And then it kind of all, or why did this person say this thing here? Or why? I mean, because and that just makes it even more exemplified, I guess, that it is so well written, because there's moments, they do a lot of flashbacks with the character, not flashbacks, but they do a lot of, I don't know what you call them. They die and then they come back to life.
It's kind of like a repeat or just like a cycle. Like they keep dying, cyclical scenes. They wake up. Yeah. They die. They come back. Yeah.
But then there's scenes where the characters are doing something, I don't know how to describe it, but they're doing something in the time loop that you just know they would have had to learn not to do that through several attempts.
Right.
So you get the sense that
they're almost moving,
they're doing this,
they're almost moving like chronologically or sequentially, even though they are in this loop. I don't know. It's just kind of a weird mix there.
And I like the way, I like the way the movie is able to convey that they are growing in this sense, but they're living the same day over and over again.
Right.
So, I mean, at the end, when you have Sarah finding an opportunity to potentially leave, and she's at a coffee shop, and she's like there for who knows how long, but you don't really, I like how they kind of focus on one character and then they go on to another a little bit, and then they kind of go back.
Yeah, I like that it's not
get to see
all,
what happened.
It's not all through Andy Samberg's prism, Niles' prism, like his own view of, warped view of the world. It's kind of, you get her view as well. And then you get, you know, a little bit of J.K. Simmons a little bit in there as well. So, yeah, I thought it was good how it kind of, like, kind of moved off of one character and went to another.
Did you have any major or minor gripes with the movie?
You know, you thought it was pretty funny. I thought it was a little short on the laughs. Like, I thought I was almost like trying to decipher the film a little bit more than I was like really able to kind of, you know, get into that escapism like of a comedy type film and just laugh. So like there was some laughs and I thought that it was decent, but I think it was primarily focused on, you know, the relationship aspects between Niles and what's her name, Sarah?
Yeah.
And just philosophical questions that it, you know, presents throughout the film. So that's just like a minor gripe with the film. I think his nihilistic view of the world and how you have a couple that comes together through their own nihilistic view of the world is, I mean, it has like this good ending, but I think it's also a little troubling. Like any relationship that kind of starts on a negative side, like, I don't know, it's interesting that that's kind of how it plays out, because I feel like that's never like, it never ends in a happy ending like that. That's just my personal opinion, but those are like minor gripes. Overall, I thought the film was really well done. It's hard to find too many faults with it.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much packed into this movie. I mean, for me, I was going into it just really ready to kind of enjoy whatever happens. And I felt like there's a lot of funny comedic moments with the romance side of things. And yeah, they had a lot of fun with the wedding party and how they were able to kind of get different time loops of what would happen if they did this in this scenario, or what happens if they did this and this and that. So you get a lot of fun moments with that plot device, and they use that, I think, very well. I mean, the nihilistic views of the movie could be troubling or wearisome for some people who, it's not very religious. It is, you know, mostly suggesting that mostly it's Andy Samberg's Niles who is mostly suggesting that
life is meaningless.
There's no point to life. Life is meaningless. Yeah. And then he mentions at one point that there's no God and this is all just miserable. He even calls it maybe like a purgatory at one point. But in the end, they're able to kind of be somewhat saved or spared from this existence because of the love and the relationship that he has with Sarah. And
yeah. Well, and you get I kind of get the idea too that Niles doesn't necessarily believe all the things that he says at the beginning, but he says that because he is unhappy, but he wants to believe that there is something more, which is why he, you know, why the way the movie ends the way it does.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
So,
because in the end he realizes that he can't live without Sarah. And I think it's the absence that makes the heart grow fonder at the end, when he doesn't know where she is. He doesn't know where Sarah is. And who knows how long that time period was. And when he finally finds her, then he just really instantly knows that that is, you know, his love. And that's what he wants out of this life.
And yeah,
I think while they don't really do a lot of character building moments towards that with his major connection, because sometimes it felt like it was coming about somewhat out of the blue. Overall, very thought-provoking, funny, and charming, a lot of laughs, a lot of good character moments, I thought. But in the end, it kind of felt like maybe Andy Samberg and kind of changing his mind came out of nowhere, but really it was just all these days, months, years of him realizing that he didn't want to go through this life anymore without her. And then that's why at the end he's kind of divulging that to Sarah and he makes his final decision. But very fun. I mean, very well done movie. It's been a blast talking about it and kind of getting into what means what. I wish we had more time to get into more of the philosophical elements of the movie. And maybe we could do that sometime as like a standalone episode. That'd be fun.
Yeah, for sure. And
I would say my overall rating for this movie was 8 out of 10.
Yep, I have it as the same.
And I would say definitely watch it if you can on Hulu. I mean, if the nihilist views of the movie, like we were talking about, if that discourages you, I would say you may have issues with it. It is rated R. It does have some. I mean, I don't feel like it's super raunchy necessarily, but there's some.
Sexual scenes that take place, but I didn't. Yeah, from the overall view of the experience of the film, I don't get the crude vibe. I get more of like this. You know, it's like actually raising legit questions about relationships. And, you know, it's got some laughs. I think you should give it a shot, even if you don't necessarily agree with the entirety of its message.
But yeah, and would you yourself buy the movie? I don't even know if you can buy it. But
I don't know if you can buy it yet, but I would say if it does come available, when it does become available, go ahead and buy it. Because I do think it's worth the repeat watches, especially to kind of, like we said, peel back some of its layers that maybe you couldn't do in the first watch for an hour and a half long movie.
And with that, would your mama watch it?
I think she would watch it. I don't think she would mind it too much. I think she may find it a little hard to follow, but I think she would watch it.
I mean, I think my mom would like some of the romantic portions, like of them kind of figuring things out at the end. You know, in romantic movies, there's always, you know, they're at odds at the beginning, and then in the middle, they kind of have some kind of fight, and then they kind of have to make some kind of embrace at the end. That's always a classic trope of the romantic movie, and that has that in here, of course, a little bit.
I like the song at the end with him embracing there at the end too. I thought it was a good piece.
Yeah, we didn't even get into the soundtrack, but they have a really good soundtrack in this also. But yeah. She would like the romantic portions of the movie. But Mom, if you're listening to this, I don't think you should watch this movie. I don't think you would really like it. But I'm saying you'd like certain elements of it. She'd be very confused as well about the beginning of the movie. I mean, if she watched Groundhog Day, maybe I'll watch Groundhog Day with you, Mom, sometime. Yeah. If you're listening. But and then maybe kind of ease you into something like this. And not, you know, if you haven't seen a movie like this, it can be kind of confusing. But yeah, it's been fun talking about it. And I think we've kind of already mentioned our movie for next week, but it will be Groundhog Day. The one and only with Bill Murray. We're going to be talking about that movie, getting into all the history, the development, the director profile, and others.
The assignment. So the assignment for our listeners, Zach, is to watch Groundhog Day.
Yes.
And it is available on Netflix, correct?
It is currently available on Netflix. I don't think it's leaving this month. I think it should still be on there. So if you have access to Netflix, go ahead and watch it, and we'll talk about it. We'll get into more spoiler territory, so that way we can really dive into what really worked and you know, what our favorite portions of the movie were, and have a good discussion. And if you guys want to send us any voice clips under the show notes, please go in and send us an audio of the. We're going to ask you a question here, and you can answer it for us next week. What if you relived the same day every day? You guys think about that question. What time period would it be? What day would you want to relive? And get back to us. And we'll put your audio on our podcast next week. Thank you guys so much for joining us again this week on Classically Current.
If you like this, please be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcast so that you will never miss a show.
And if you guys found value in our show, we'd love it if you guys gave us a review so that we can continue to grow and reach more enthusiastic movie fans in the future.
Or if you'd simply tell a friend about the show, that would help us out a lot too.
Be sure to tune in next week.
Thanks again for joining us.
Stay classy
and stay current.